When you listen to people speak, certain words and phrases give you clues to where a person is from. If someone says on the phone, "Have him to call me," they're probably from Alabama. If someone talks about their mutual friends as Bob and Donna, they're probably from Boston. We don't have such clear regionalisms in our neck of the woods, or do we? A linguist from the University of Washington is on the hunt for a Southern Oregon dialect. Anna Christina Moroz is a doctoral candidate at the University of Washington, and she's doing this research in the region and is our guest in the studio. Anna, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a general idea of your research and the kinds of things that you take in.
I think the first thing I really should do is talk about what I mean by dialect. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by dialect is a speech variety. Sometimes when people use the word dialect, they use it in a pejorative way, where they say they don't speak English, they speak some sort of dialect. Mm-hmm. And linguists don't really use dialect that way. So I'm really just looking at what you just described. Are there certain features, whether they be lexical, certain sounds, or some sort of syntactic features that really characterize someone as being from this area?
And I think you hit all three right there. So it's certain sounds, certain choices of words, and certain phrases as well, right?
Yeah, and some morphology at times too, or certain meanings of words. So if someone says a word and it's understood differently in a different spot too. But for my research, I'm really focusing more on sounds.
Sounds. Okay. So you do work on foreign languages as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's not especially the focus of this project, but I am working also on Polish and Russian.
Okay. So there's a lot to be fascinated about in this field, it sounds like.
Definitely. Linguistics is a very broad field that can be applied to a lot of different fields as well, such as law, education, history. And then within my field, I work on sociolinguistics, which is society and language.
Well, I noticed in a description of one of the courses that you teach at the University of Washington that it introduces the study of sociolects, which is a really interesting term. What does that mean?
It has to do with just dialects associated with social groups. We know that language varies based off of many factors, geography, socioeconomic status, ethnicity. And it's just one of those ways that language varieties can vary.
So it sounds like even within a region, I mean, you could have something that would be more or less a fairly common way of speaking within a region. But even within that region, it sounds like based on a lot of other factors in your life, part of town you live in, social status, economic status, you could speak differently from people in the same town, actually a few blocks away even.
Definitely. It's quite interesting even how people navigate that. Because you would talk differently to a cop, probably, or on the radio than with your friends. And it's really stunning in a way to see how people are so flexible and learn these different codes that apply in different situations.
I'm glad you brought up on the radio, because it made me think of somebody I worked with in Alabama who talked like this when he was off the microphone, and then we get him on the air and say, "Good morning, you're listening to 31 Eyewitness News." And Adrian got all upright at just mm-hmm. that moment when the microphone lights went on.
That's really interesting. I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah, you'd believe me. You could do quite a study of dialects just within the broadcasting business. Anna Christina Moroz is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a doctoral candidate at the University of Washington on the hunt for a Southern Oregon dialect. And we can't talk in great specifics about this current research, but we can talk in more general terms of what she usually does. Your questions and comments, welcome on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And let me put it to you this way. If you're a transplant to the region, what are some of the things that got said here that you never noticed anyplace else? 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let me throw one back to you, because there's one that I never heard before I moved to Oregon, which was when people would say, "The oil in the car needs changed." Not needs to be changed or needs changing, but needs changed.
I really feel like I should not really talk specifically about the location of certain dialect features, but that's definitely something we can talk about a bit later.
Mm-hmm. So where have you done studies of dialects before?
This is my first major study. I've done some pilots up in Seattle, but really this is my first big sort of stepping into the field and doing dialectology. In order to do this project, I'm interviewing people who are from the area. My ideal candidates are people who were born in Ashland or near Ashland and stayed here their whole lives, but it's really difficult to get such people. Of course, I'm being a little bit flexible, but all participants are 18 years old at least and have mostly stayed in the area in Jackson or Josephine County, and men and women. And basically, in order to do the whole interview, I've been recording people individually. And for the interview, I ask them questions about the area because I'm not originally from Southern Oregon. I'm originally from the Portland area. And of course, being from the Portland area, I'm fascinated by just dialects in Oregon and wanted there to be more information about that. And then after interviewing people, like asking them questions about where they're from and about the area and things like that, I have a short reading passage, sentence list, and also words in isolation that I ask people to read. I have a bit of control.
So there's a fair amount of stuff that people have to do then to kind of display what their use of language is like in front of you.
It takes about an hour, but it's really important to note that linguists aren't really in the job of judging. We're just in the job of noting what is happening in the area.
So how much training have you had to go through to make sure that you keep a fairly blank face while people are doing things, no matter what they're doing in speaking?
I've had to do quite a bit of training, really. Just learning how to use the tools takes quite a bit of time, months, at this point, years. Of course, understanding the theory is incredibly important, and knowing what past work has been done in order to have a study that it can be really add to the field as a whole.
A couple of things I want to ask about, though. First of all, you want people to be monolingual. That's one of them, right?
Yeah. So it's really just because this is a pretty small scale study. My goal is to have at least 20 people. I can have at most 30, but I'd rather be closer to 24 or 26. And I grew up bilingual, speaking Polish and English at home, and I have a couple of things I struggle to say sometimes, especially when I'm tired. And so it just really helps when you're analyzing the data to have monolingual speakers. I think that in a much bigger study, let's say if I was interviewing 100 people or so 200 people, I mean, honestly, we want really big studies, and that kind of makes it better when you have sort of more differences in what languages people know, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. So because it'll influence the way they say certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Even the word choices, obviously. If you grew up in a household where this is referred to as a whatever.
Yeah. Like my dad, for example, he spent some time living in Illinois and New Orleans before moving to Oregon, and he calls a stapler a step gun.
A step gun?
A step gun, yeah. And I always would just not really understand what he was talking about, and he told me that it's a word. When I was a kid, he tried to convince me, but I was like, Dad, don't you mean stapler? And I think that happens to a lot of children, not just like bilingual children, but if your parents are from a different area, you might hear some words that are very different.
I remember getting confused about refrigerator when I was a kid. I said, wait, what do we call it? Because the neighbors call it a frigidaire. They always call it a frigidaire. It got me confused. I hadn't been calling it a refrigerator for that long myself. What got your attention focused on Southern Oregon as a place for research? Particularly, it sounds like a fairly Ashland-centric look.
Yeah. So there were a couple of different reasons why I decided to come to Ashland. So the broadest reason is really that I'm interested in Oregon, and there have been quite a few studies done in California, such as in Redding. There's a new one coming out in Eureka. There's some work that's been done in Bakersfield, a lot in San Francisco. And then in Washington, we have some work in Spokane, Cowlitz County, Yakima, of course, Seattle. And then in Oregon, there's been a lot of stuff done in Portland. But outside of Portland, it seems like the work really centers around the Willamette Valley. And I really wanted to add a little bit more to the research, especially when looking at a map and seeing where studies have been done. There just seemed to be a really, really wide gap in the research between the Willamette Valley and California. And Ashland was really attracted. What really attracted me to coming to Ashland was that there is Southern Oregon University, which I thought would be a helpful resource in doing the project. And I also wanted to focus on a sort of medium-sized town, because we've been doing a lot of work with like more urban areas recently, and I wanted to do something a little bit different. And then after this project is done, I'd like to go to Klamath Falls. And so it seemed like a very good sort of similar sized town. And we know that there are differences in Washington and how people think dialects, where people think dialects are depending on what side of the Cascades they're on.
Right.
And so I wanted to see, just do a very good comparison of two different places that were definitely located in Southern Oregon.
Anna Moros is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a doctoral candidate in linguistics at the University of Washington. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about whether there's an Ashland dialect or not. We can't really talk about the research very specifically because it's still underway. You can join us at 800-838-3760, though, or jx@jeffnet.org. Call from Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the exchange.
Well, good morning, Jeffrey.
Hi, Jamie.
Is it Emily?
It's Anna.
Anna, excuse me. I have something you might be interested in. First of all, let me qualify myself. I'm 61 years old, so I don't really fit your demographics. But
you actually do. Just have to be over 18. 18 or older.
There you go. Easy demographic. Okay. What's up, Jamie?
Well, basically, I was born in Klamath Falls, raised in Medford. Parents got divorced when I was about 13, and we moved down to Southern California. And we wound up in the San Fernando Valley. And Anna, are you familiar with the term Valley Girl?
I have heard a little bit about it, but I'd love to hear what you think when you hear the word Valley
Girl.
Oh,
my God. And I was like, oh, my God, really? Shaw? And it was like all kinds of expressions you say that only people that are locally down there in the San Fernando Valley understand, you know.
Gag me with a spoon.
Yeah, exactly. Gag me with a spoon. Thank you. Yeah, Frank Zappa's kid. Yeah.
Mm, right. Okay, all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah, but what it comes down to is that, believe me, I'm amazed that we can understand each other at all when it comes to locations and stuff like that. So, yeah, Jeffrey, you were talking about those terms about in Alabama. And
mm-hmm, right.
Frankly speaking, you speak the language that you're living with, so that's my comment, and I'll just take Anna's response to that off the air.
All right, thanks, Jamie. Appreciate that.
So, of course, we learn language based off of the input that we have around us, so we learn whatever dialects we grow up with, and even if we move, it's very possible that we'll... try to sound more like the area or try to hide certain features that characterize us as being from a certain area. And often how well you do that depends on your age and what the feature is. Some features are easier than others. I really appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. We have an email from Anthony, no town given. He says, originally from Southern California, transplanted to Eugene 15 years ago. I did notice several commonly used words I hadn't noticed being used so commonly in California. There, cars were cars, trucks were trucks, and motorcycles were motorcycles. Here, cars and trucks are rigs, and motorcycles are motorcycles. That from Anthony and Eugene. And then another one from Jason, no town given. He says, I know my grandpa from Kay Falls always refers to streams as cricks. Never heard this anywhere else in the country. Well, it's funny because my wife and I were talking about this. She's from Alabama and so got used to the term crick there as well. So, yeah, different subtle things. I wonder, though, as a linguist, I mean, does the mirror get turned back on you? Does the lens get the microphone, in essence, get turned on you? Are you much more aware of your own speech patterns since you've gotten into this line of work?
I think that... becoming a linguist has really taught me to appreciate how I speak. I feel like I emphasize certain features that I know are from certain areas. I definitely am a bit more aware of my style. I notice when I speak higher, when I speak lower, what the context is. When I say certain features that definitely ring as being from Seattle, I know who I'm talking to and why I might have said that. So definitely I have noticed a lot about my own speech patterns, and but I think I notice a lot more about how other people speak more than how I speak.
You certainly have a trained ear for it now. So if people want to help you with your study, how do they get a hold of you? Are you taking volunteers, or you rather self-select them?
The best way to contact me is through my email. It's akmoroz@uw.edu. I'm still looking for participants. I'm not even halfway there, so still looking.
All right, we'll put an email link on our web blurb about this, and it'll go up next to the interview once we get that. One thing I wonder, though, about dialects before we go is that I would think there's a thought strain that by now TV might have gotten rid of a lot of regional dialects, but that hasn't happened. And I wonder, though, if we're entering this age where people communicate without sound so much with texts and in emails, if that might make a change.
That is a big question. And I think the simplest answer to that is really that there haven't been conclusive studies that show huge media effects on speech. Of course, it's possible that certain words will get spread because of the media pretty easily. But when we talk about syntax, which is sentence structure, when we talk about sounds, it's really like we haven't found very conclusive evidence.
Okay. Anna Christina Moroz from the University of Washington, a doctoral student working in linguistics, is out there looking for a Southern Oregon dialect again. You can contact her if you're interested in taking part, looking for people in the Ashland area potentially who grew up here and spent their lives here, 18 plus. And monolingual, akmoroz@uw.edu. We'll put that on our website as well.